touched on all sorts of things, which I'm sure all of us are going to find of interest. Any comments? We do the comments via the chat, don't we? Yeah. Okay. And the first person on the list is Steve. Steve?
Thanks, Alan. What you're talking about? Right. Slightly different point. What's happened with this football or with the World Cup is indicative of what's been happening at national levels as well as regards football. Talking about commercialisation, what we've got now is because television is so important, it's now become football, live football on telly is like, in UK, is like 5 or 6 days a week, and not just at a given time. There can be like three or four matches in a given day shown on television, which sounds like, I mean, it sounds like heaven for a football supporter like me. But it's obvious that my issue with it is that because of the money interest now, far more than it used to be. As far as I can remember, when I was a kid, it used to be a local capitalist who would support a football club. For example, Warburton's at Bolton. All right, that's my team. So Warburton the baker is now a national company, but it's based in Bolton. And for a long, long time, they subsidised the club. All right, obviously, it's still a distraction for the working class, even at that stage. I appreciate that, but it's now just been really taken over by international capital, and you've got the big brands like Nike and Adidas, who are basically I mean, as Alan was saying, they're basically using their using World Cup to advertise the brands, and then you've got all the surrounding and extremely harmful advertising around the stadium for, as Alan mentioned, particularly gambling. Right. Okay. So I just think that they've changed a bit of a culture. So I'm probably being a bit reactionary and want things to be like when I was a little boy. And you could go to a football match and you wouldn't know what was the outcome of other games in your division, for example, until you got out of the ground or got home. But it just seems to me incredible that an organisation like FIFA that purports to be encouraging sport should go to a country like Qatar, where it's impossible to play football. I mean, it used to be the case that they would argue, well, we'll go to the USA so we can develop the game, encourage the game of football. But they've gone to Qatar on the basis of all that money, to a place where there's no football league, apparently. There's no professional football league, and it's too bloody hot to play football. Therefore, I think it's really pissed off a lot of people, particularly in this country, including myself. So, right, I'm rambling. Thank you all.
Thanks, Steve. Who would like to follow Steve? Alan. Any response at all?
Well, basically, that's a response on TV coverage. We now have, beforehand, it was 3 o'clock Saturday afternoons, everybody played. And as Steve said, nobody knew what was going on in the other games until afterwards when they got their special issue of the paper. But now they changed the fixtures. First of all, it was to include Sunday games. Now it's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for league games. And it is the TV rights that is the driver of this. The big clubs don't rely on the local support now. Man United, Liverpool, Tottenham, they all rely on foreign supporters. The biggest clubs in the country I live in is Man United and Liverpool. You can go to other foreign countries and they all support an English team, basically. More popular than the German or the Italian or the Spanish for some reason. But it's to do with the TV coverage, the sponsorship, the association with success. The Red Bull, they became interested in clubs, sponsorships, etc. But again, I'm rambling now.
Thanks, Alan. Okay. If no one's speaking at the moment, perhaps I can say a quick word myself as a lifelong football fan myself. I've always liked the game, still do, despite the commercialization of it. It's pretty sickening, that, but I sort of closed my eyes to that and just watch the game, just watch the football, because I just think it's a great game. But what I can't close my eyes to is the jingoism, which is implicit in international football. Can't watch it at all for that reason. It's still a great game, but I just cannot watch it because of what it stirs up in people, because of what it means, because of the sort of feelings of superiority or inferiority that are involved in the outcome of a particular match, a particular contest, a particular tournament. So actually, I won't be watching any of the matches that take place in Qatar. I'll, on television, obviously, a lot of them are on television. I'll just miss football for however long it takes, 2 or 3 weeks. Much rather watch lower league football in this country than these sort of great teams that are playing in Qatar. It sort of just nauseates me, I'm afraid. That's my take on it. Even more so, I suppose, given sort of where it's being played and the circumstances that we've heard about from Alan. Right, Paddy, over to you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, as a not a lifelong football fan, I'm the sort of classic 90-minute nationalist, as they call them. You know, people who sort of will watch England when they're playing in the World Cup, but not in any other time. But I must admit, I feel the same as you do, Howard. I the whole business, you know, fills me with utter distaste, and I think I'll just skip it, really. I don't really get sport. I don't really get team sports in the, at the sort of international level. I mean, there is this idea. I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there's this kind of romantic idea that sport unites us all and politics divides us, and therefore we should keep the two things as in kind of separate bubbles, separate ideological spheres, a bit like some people have said about, you know, science and religion. Don't let them touch because they'll just clash. But, I mean, I don't really get that, because most, you know, team sports at the international level are really highly competitive, and therefore they are divisive. I mean, in fact, this is where the jingoism comes from, because they're used as sort of analogues of international rivalry, you know, as a kind of soft proxy war in a way. So, I mean, to me, that sort of sport is completely wrapped up in politics. So it just seems nonsensical to me to argue that they're separate, and therefore it's quite all right to, you know, tune into the Qatari World Cup because it's got nothing to do with the reality of human rights there. I mean, it's all of a piece. And what strikes me about that is that whether or not the sort of national zeitgeist or the states view of it is that, you know, the politics should be separate from the sport. Rather depends on what stake the state has got in it. If you, it seems to me that, you know, when I remember when, I mean, Alan mentioned, you know, Scotland playing Chile. And I recall as a kid, you know, being a huge fuss about the England rugby team playing the South Africans during the Springbok tour, because it was seen as sort of, you know, being tacitly supportive of apartheid in South Africa. And there was a huge amount of protest about that, and I think quite rightly so, actually. But, you know, this was regarded as, oh, well, you know, the general feeling was it's nothing, you know, the two things have got nothing to do with each other. And yet, what happened last year, during last year's Wimbledon, I don't know if there are any tennis fans here, but the world number one wasn't allowed to play Wimbledon because he happened to be Russian, and there were a couple of Belarus players who, quite high up, high-seeded players who couldn't play either, you know. So in that situation, lo and behold, politics and sport are the same, you know, they are linked. I'm no great football expert at all. I know nothing about it at all. But just out of interest, I'll mention a film that I happened to watch yesterday, and it was on, for people in the UK, it was on BBC iPlayer. It's still on BBC iPlayer. It was quite interesting. It was certainly news to me. Football fans here will know about it. But it's a biopic of called The Keeper, about a famous post-war Manchester City goalkeeper called Bernhard Trautmann, who joined Manchester City in 1946 after being in the Hitler Youth and winning 5 medals on the Eastern Front, including the Iron Cross. And the film sort of charts his kind of progress against huge hostility, as you can imagine, post-war, from English crowds, you know, until he sort of finally won them over because he was so great at football, sort of thing. And coincidentally, I watched that yesterday. But, you know, that film sort of painted, sort of put across this idea that, you know, sport, it should be above politics. You know, we should put politics to one side when it's a matter of sport. And, you know, clearly these audiences, you know, these English audiences in 1946, they had very strong feelings against the Germans, which you couldn't entirely put down to you know, racism at the time. And it painted them very unsympathetically, and as if they should really just, you know, heaven's sake, the war's over, put all that stuff aside. So I don't know. I don't know what I think here. I don't really take sport seriously. I just think myself, I think it's a bit of fun. But if you've got a situation like what the Qataris have been doing and what they've been doing to their migrant workers and their own human rights record, you know, the world should have told them to fuck right off, frankly.
OK, thanks, Paddy. Bert Trautmann, saw him many times, actually. Yeah, OK. Over to Moggy.
Hello. Yes, I saw Bert Trautmann play years ago. And, he was the best goalkeeper in the country, wasn't he, at the time? What really gets me, because I've been a soccer fan for years and years. I used to go and watch Man U. But it's the advertising now that makes it so hard to watch. If I'm trying to watch it on television, you can't even see where the ball is because they've got stuff painted on the pitch. The ball just disappears. You can't see where it is. And even the advertising around the edge of the pitch, it's not just static, it's stuff that moves and flashes, and it's just terrible. I just can't enjoy watching soccer anymore. You know, if they get rid of all the advertising and get rid of all this silly stuff painted all over the pitch, it'd be very enjoyable to watch again. Anyway, that's my rant.
Thanks, Moggy. Alan, I don't know if you've anything to respond to the last sort of two or three contributions before we move to Steve?
I remember being at Murrayfield opposing the Springboks. But my earliest memory of politics and sport was 1968 with the Black Power salutes, which for me was the memorable for that. But as Paddy says, politics and sport has always been mixed up. We had the Moscow boycott, remember, when the Olympics were boycotted because I think it was the Afghanistan invasion by the Russians. So, yeah, you just can't separate politics and sport.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Steve? You're muted, Steve, at the moment.
Yeah, sorry. Okay. I was on a different screen. Just a couple of observations. Yeah, backing up what Paddy's saying. I mean, there's absolutely no danger that politics is political. You saw it in Argentina when they won the World Cup in, I think it was 86, when the generals were killing 30,000 people. Was it 30,000? Yeah, 10 million. Yeah, they were killing 30,000 people like us. And they got themselves on the television celebrating with the World Cup winners. I've forgotten who the captain was at that stage. Perhaps somebody else will remember. And the same thing in Brazil in the when they had the dictatorship. And you can just bet if they win it this time that fucking Bolsonaro will pop up, because he doesn't hand over power, I don't think, until next year. But you can bet he'll want to stick his frigging ugly face into it. But and in England too, I don't know. I mean, people who don't go to football won't know this, but I am sick to death of my football club being they've got a chaplain, and just before the 11th of November, you get all this mawkish stuff at the remembrance. So they actually lay poppies on the grass these days. And all this, by the way, is fairly recent stuff. I don't remember any of this as a kid. So you've got that political aspect of it about supporting British militarism. And you may not know, but one of the Windsor boys is allowed to support one of these proletarian football clubs. He doesn't so-called support a London football team. He supports Aston Villa, and there's now I think that bloke's been claims to be the Prince of Wales, doesn't he? So he'll be going, and he's got two teams to support when he goes to Qatar. The good thing about it, well, the hilarious thing that I learned today is that they've now decided that they can't sell alcohol in the grounds. So there's going to be a lot of very bloody annoyed fans there. So and just very, very brief, one very brief thing about this pitch side advertising. If you don't go to football, if you don't go to football grounds, you might not realise that it's only around three sides, at least the club I go to. It's around three sides. And as Moggy says, it's now been animated. So you can't actually, sometimes you cannot see the ball. You can't see the player's bloody shirt sometimes. You can't see who's got the sodding ball. It can be that bright. And they move. They're dynamic. So it's intended to distract the fans to such an extent that I've actually changed sides. I used to sit at one side on the same side as the cameras. Now I've switched sides so that I don't have to look at one side of the pitch with these bloody silly adverts. So it just You're thinking, hang on, this is a game of football. I've come to watch my team play football. Hopefully they'll score a goal and it'll be nice, or it'll be a good game of football. And some get is decided that it's a good opportunity to jump in at me and say, here, buy some bloody insurance or go and bet Fred. And I find that really revolting. And I see the same thing all over the urban landscape. You know, adverts on the uprises on steps. If you go on to in some underground rail systems, for example, in Argentina, I don't know if it's the case in London, but you're obviously all the time we're being exposed to this sort of crap advertising, visual pollution, mental pollution. And it's going to get nothing but worse, because we've now got these bloody interactive screens that are popping up around the place. So it's going to end up, if we don't get rid of the capitalist class, it's going to end up a bit like Blade Runner. If you remember the original Blade Runner, it was like this appalling visual contamination of everybody's environment all of the time. You can't even go for a pee at Bolton without looking at an advert. So I shut my eyes and then I get a wet shoe. Okay, thank you.
Right, thanks, Steve. Okay, we get the point, definitely. Dougie, over to you.
Yeah, we're not talking about international football. I was brought up being taken to all the Rangers games with my dad or whatever, you know. And he was part of the Rangers supporters club, and they'd meet the players every year, you know, a sort of meal thing and a dance or whatever, you know. And all the players at the time were from about a 30-mile radius. When Celtic won the European Cup, all the players were from a 30-mile radius of Glasgow. And, you know, the wages they got were probably better than most workers, but they didn't get the astronomical wages that football players get now. And a lot of that's to do with, you know, with the media and sort of television, and it's big business and big business for gambling, really, you know. I mean, George Orwell said, give them football, beer, and I'm trying to think what the other one is. It just distracts them from reality, or beer and gambling, you know, football, beer and gambling, and it keeps them happy. And people get really upset when their football team loses or gets demoted in the scheme of things. I mean, I enjoyed watching football as a kid, you know. Oh, it was a bit dangerous sometimes. If we were playing Celtic and Celtic scored, some of the Rangers supporters would throw bottles at the goal mouth, and it would land on the young kids down the front to see properly. And then my dad went to that game when there was about 67 people killed, because somebody scored a goal towards the end of the game and everybody moved back, and it caused a thing on the stairs and the metal got all bent, and I think it was 67 people died. My dad was at that game, but luckily he wasn't injured or whatever, you know. But I mean, I worked for ICI and I played football myself, you know, and I played football with a guy called Tommy Gemmell, and he was not the Tommy Gemmell that played for Celtic, but he played for St Mirren, and he was working in ICI, and he was in his 50s and he still played football. He was probably the best player we had in the team, and he got player of the year a few times when he was in his 50s or whatever. He's died a long time ago, but I mean, he didn't make a lot of money out of football, but he played for St Mirren and Celtic. But I mean, if you did that now, you'd be on a good wage, right? But anyway, I'm rambling a bit. But yeah, football is a beautiful game, but it's been tarnished. I mean, there's blood on that World Cup now, right? You know, and Scotland were bad to play Chile at the time as well. Yeah. Well, all right, I'll leave it at that. I'm rambling a bit.
Thanks, Dougie. Alan, do you want to comment at all on what's been said in the last few minutes?
Just a comment on Brazil and Bolsonaro. He turned the Brazilian national strips, the yellow and the green, into parity colours for him. And a lot of Brazilians had to start ditching their Brazilian shirts because of the association with Bolsonaro. I don't know what's going to happen in the World Cup, whether it will continue or not. But as Steve says, they're going to take advantage. Bolsonaro will take advantage of the nationalism, etc. I don't know if I mentioned in that spiel I gave about Qatar's reason for hosting the World Cup. They're spending over £200 million, £200 billion, I mean, to host this event. Previously, the most spent by the countries have been in their £20 billion, £30 billion. So this is 10 times as much being spent in the World Cup. And one of the reasons is politics itself. Qatar recently has had a political and diplomatic disagreement with Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. They couldn't overfly these countries' airspace. And they were a threat to their independence being expressed by Saudi Arabia, especially since Qatar supported the Muslim Brotherhood and also the Yemen. The civil war in Yemen was separate. So one of the reasons I think they've been emphasising their sport is simply to emphasise their independence, that they are a different country, that there is a sovereign nation. And it gives them this prestige and association that it won't be so easy as it has been for other countries just to subsume another neighbouring country and cooperate. Because I think Qatar is one of the smallest nations. They're not the size of Bahrain or Kuwait or United Arab Emirates. And the political independence is always a threat. So by associating themselves with sport, they emphasise their independence. That's something I just wanted to say.
Thanks, Alan. Moggy, you've got your hand up. Is that from before, or are you going to make another point?
No. I just wanted to say, seeing as how Qatar's got so many billions of dollars to chuck away, they could be asked to host the next Winter Olympics, because I'm sure they could afford to build lots of indoor stadiums and fill them with artificial snow. That's all.
Thanks, Moggy. Nobody with their hand up for the moment. I wonder if I can sort of, in the interim, so read a short passage out, very short, a minute or two, because it's with some relevance to the discussion we're having. It contains a sort of brief, sort of, what can you call it, psychoanalysis of sort of football fandom. It's a passage from a book called, a book by an American writer called Charles Eisenstein. Some of you may know him. And the title of the book is The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. Striking title. And the passage is as follows. It's a dozen lines long. The objects of our selfish desires are but substitutes for what we really want. Advertisers play on this all the time, selling sports cars as a substitute for freedom, junk food and soda as a substitute for excitement, brands as a substitute for social identity, and pretty much everything as a substitute for sex, itself a proxy for the intimacy that is so lacking in modern life. We might also see sports hero worship as a substitute for the expression of one's own greatness, amusement parks as a substitute for the transcending of boundaries, pornography as a substitute for self-love, and overeating as a substitute for connection or the feeling of being present. What we really need is nearly unavailable in the lives that society offers us. I found that quite striking. I don't know if other people did or not. Steve, you've got your hand up now anyway.
Totally. Well, with most of what was expressed in that passage, absolutely. And I wanted to raise that issue because as a football fan, I'm always in two minds. And realizing that this is an expression, that it's an expression of my own alienation, and it's obviously people when they buy in these bits of polyester at 45 quid or something like that once every season. These days with an advertising slogan on it, I mean, it's just incredible that we've come to that. What walking around with? I mean, like the one that it doesn't really matter. But all these people have got these different bloody adverts on the bodies, and the thing that they used to pay people to carry sandwich boards for, people are now doing voluntarily because. And I wonder if it's because like prior. I mean, if you look at the football crowd from 1970s. Or before that, it's flat caps, it's a load of cigarette smoke going atop, and people with their overcoats on. Nowadays, it's if you look at somewhere like Real Madrid, the entire stand at the back of one of the goals, they're all sitting there in white bloody Real shirts, and then they're walking about with these adverts on for. Whatever, whether it be gambling or I don't think they allow alcohol, Alan, in British football. They certainly do allow gamblers though, or betting firms. And so whenever I go, I'm always in these two minds as to what I'm actually doing. Realising my own alienation, yet still being attracted to it, but not to the extent that I'll walk around advertising somebody's name on a bloody polyester rag. Just what you were saying before, though, just slightly change the subject, but on a different point. You were saying that you're not going to bother with any of this World Cup. Well, that was my attitude actually. As well, I'm not interested in watching it as an England supporter because I think it's absolutely appalling what they've done. But I'd be interested. I think England play Iran first, and I'd be interested to watch that to see what actually goes on with the players, because as Alan was mentioned in his talk, we've got the professional footballers in Iran have stopped celebrating goals to show solidarity with these protests. And apparently what the Iranian television does is they don't show the team that scores celebrating. They show the team that's just conceded a goal. And I wonder if... I can't actually see Iran scoring any goals in the World Cup, but I wonder whether the English players would have the common humanity not to celebrate a goal if they score against them as a sign of solidarity. Doubt it, but never mind. So for that reason, I'm going to watch that match, and then I'm going to leave it alone. I think until Brazil play, which I just can't resist. I'm afraid.
Interesting point, Steve. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting point there. Yeah. So you seem to be agreeing that you regard your Bolton Wonder sports heroes as a substitute for the expression of your own greatness. Okay, fine.
Sorry. I said I agree with most of what you said.
Okay.
Just a correction is that Scottish football still allows alcohol advertising at football. I think the law is getting changed so that in the future that there will be restrictions based on it, and that even the players won't be able to privately promote alcohol. Just a little correction there, that Scottish rules are different from perhaps the English FA.
Yeah, it's interesting. They don't allow alcohol advertising, but they certainly allow gambling advertising. In fact, you know, football is riddled with gambling adverts, isn't it? And a lot of the players are sort of directly involved as well, you know, earning even more money than they earn as players. Quite extraordinary. Anybody else like to make a comment, ask a question? Adam, over to you.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything about soccer because I don't know anything about it. I never played it, but I wanted to take up something that Steve said. He said he can't see Iran scoring a goal, but surely the big match for the whole thing is Iran versus America. It's I think we're in the same, whatever, it's the same section of it. I mean, we're quite good. Well, depending on your point of view, but, well, it's going to be a very political match, isn't it? I would imagine that Iran has got a better football team than soccer team than America, but perhaps somebody else knows more about it can say something.
Thanks, Adam. You can't say soccer these days. I'm sorry. John, over to you.
Ah, yes. Ah, yeah, the soccer is an Americanism, really, I think. But just as it's been said, that all the advertising intrusion into football and so on, it intrudes into every aspect of life. Capitalism just, as well as irretrievably ruining football, it seems to ruin just about everything it touches. You can't do anything without being interrupted with some kind of advertisement, somebody trying to sell you something, or somebody just wanting to bother you with how did we do? How did we do in some routine transaction or some routine exchange? You know, and they want you to provide them with a whole load of data that presumably will help them to sell their product, or perhaps your comments can actually be aggregated with a whole load of other people and then sold on to someone else. We don't know the half of what goes on behind the scenes. It's just a sordid, filthy society that we have that's irretrievably ruined football and seems to ruin everything it touches. And that's before you deal with the other issues associated with football in the minds of the fans, when they've been so conditioned to either hate the other team or to be imbued with nationalistic fervour at times like the World Cup or any other international fixtures. And it's just a shame. I used to, years ago, avoid watching Scottish football and watch Serie A Italian football, which came on the television very late at night, early in the morning. And then eventually, of course, I realised that the bigotry associated with Scottish football is quite awful, and they don't have quite the same thing in Italy. They just have a different kind of bigotry, and quite often it involves them killing each other, which we haven't really had in Glasgow for quite a number of years. People don't usually get killed at Celtic Rangers matches. So that's not to say that they're somehow better than the Italian mob. They all have their own awfulness associated with them. And a lot of that's to do with workers being apparently at the mercy of various different forms of propaganda, whether it be capitalism in general, stuff you can buy, or whether it's to do with outmoded religious notions and affiliations. So everything's just a mess. I shouldn't be laughing, but you can't help but laugh, because if you didn't, you would just be roaring and crying all the time. You know, you would just be in a state of nervous collapse dealing with this awful social system. So, well, that's all I have to say about that for the moment.
Thanks, John. I don't think many people have been killed at Italian football matches, actually. It's something I've followed over the years sort of fairly closely. Italian football, of course, used to be the big thing, didn't it? The Serie A used to be shown on a Sunday afternoon on television. People look forward to it. It's much less the case now. But you do in Italian football, of course, have these sort of gangs who, you know, confront one another. But don't think there's been a lot of killing. But anyway, okay. John, have you still got your hand up from before, or are you coming back to me? Okay. Right. Steve.
Yeah, just very quickly about violence. There is there's quite a lot of violence that that goes on in South American football. Well, certainly in Uruguayan football, and actually, sorry, did I say Uruguayan, but more specific, more prevalent in Argentinian football, and it's quite surprising to see that over there that. I'm assuming that something similar goes on in with the ultras, some of the ultras in Italy as well. It's actually taken over by bloody drug gangs and criminal gangs around Boca Juniors or River Plate, for example. There are protection rackets run. In some of the restaurants, in a particular tourist trap that I'm thinking of, they control car parking around the stadium on public roads. So if you can't park your car unless you pay some money to these to these criminals, and there has actually been murders. In power struggles between the various groups within a club, and then there's also been this there's also this issue of fan violence as well. There's this one particular nasty little bastard called Dizeo, I think he was called, about five or six years ago, was involved in, like, basically they kicked a supporter to death. From a very minor club that was absolutely, you know, nothing to do with the sort of usual rivalry between Boca and River Plate. And it's just absolutely appalling. And these buggers, they actually got some sort of power within the National Argentinian Football Association, because they're able to get and they control some of the distribution of tickets for international games, particularly at the World Cup. It's quite astonishing to see. Just leave it at that.
Thanks, Steve. Alan, do you want to come back on anything?
Basically, something what John was saying. I think he's well aware that it might not have been any deaths, but there's certainly been a lot of bruises and cuts exchanged between Rangers and Celtic. I know myself, from where I worked, the hatred and the bigotry wasn't just restricted to them. It existed between Hibs and Hearts. And we saw it during the Queen's death. Rangers proudly singing "God Save the King" and Celtic fans mocking the death of the Queen. So the political differences goes quite deep. We shouldn't sort of say, okay, somebody's not got killed. But I remember It was only a few years ago that a Celtic fan walking past a group of Rangers fans, he did get stabbed to death. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago. So there is violence between Rangers, Celtic, Hibs, Hearts. And that transcends the tribalism that takes place, I suppose, between Liverpool and Manchester United fans, because Scottish history is deeply enmeshed in this religious bigotry. Just something like that.
Thanks, Alan. Yeah, that kind of violence is almost certainly a sort of proxy for other things, isn't it? It's a proxy, a substitute for powerlessness, dissatisfaction, inability to sort of fulfil oneself that causes people to turn to that kind of behaviour. And, might as well do it to opposition football fans as sort of anyone else. John, over to you.
Yes, just on the question of the Celtic and Rangers divide. I've noticed in recent years, due to the needs of capitalism, it's become unacceptable in workplaces for people to exhibit too much of that bigotry. So it's still there. There's still an undercurrent of it there, but it manifests itself as an apparently good-natured banter. So in the workplace, they probably haven't got away with so much of the more outrageous behaviour that they would on the street on a Saturday night. In the workplace, they have to obviously have a mind to the so-called harmony of the workplace on behalf of the capitalists for whom they work. But just more generally, I don't know if anyone else noticed this about the decision in Qatar to not sell alcohol in and around the matches. That doesn't, of course, apply to, I just couldn't help noticing this, and it doesn't apply to the corporate clients. So anyone who's got corporate hospitality, of course, they're, as they are probably in most places in the world, they're exempt from these things, so they can probably get anything they like. So that was interesting to notice that. Also, somebody mentioned something about the Royals, and there was something in the news recently about the new Prince of Wales, because I keep thinking of the one that they're calling the King is actually the Prince of Wales, but his son, the new Prince of Wales, there's a complaint from some quarters that, he's not going to be supporting Wales because he's already admitted that he's an England supporter in terms of the international football. And this means that some people are saying, oh, yes, this tends to support the idea that the Prince of Wales is imposed on Wales. Well, I don't know whether these people realised that was the history of it, that in fact Edward I imposed his son on Wales to say, you're not going to have a prince. If you do have one, it'll be one I give you. So that was the history of that particular title. But it was just quite amusing that they were getting all angst-ridden over, whether the Prince of Wales should actually support Wales or is Wales just to support him and he's free to support England. They just get themselves into a lot of silliness over these things.
Thanks, John. Dougie?
I mean, I was brought up as a Rangers supporter when my dad took me to the games. And I could see the bigotry that was inherent in it, singing certain songs and stuff. But, I mean, when I got a bit older, I had a lot of Catholic friends that supported Celtic, and we got on okay, really, And there would be a bit of banter about things, but it wasn't that bad. But, I mean, when I was young and going to the games, I'd maybe see a Celtic game, you'd be at the back of the goal or whatever, and if Celtic scored, some of the fans would throw bottles and it would land on the kids down the front, and I know I got hit by a bottle a few times, or, you know, when I was down the front watching Rangers Celtic or whatever. So I remember going to see Scotland play Argentina, and everybody kept saying, who's the number 10? It was Maradona. He was by far the best player on the park or whatever. I think he put the ball through Woods' legs. I think they beat Scotland 3-1. They could have beat them 10-1. I mean, Maradona was a one-man team, really. You know, he was just amazing. But I don't know what was going on in Argentina at the time. Scotland played them, you know. So, I mean, politics always comes into football, right, you know. So, anyway, yeah, that's just what I remember from being a Rangers supporter, right?
Thanks, Dougie. I did see a hand up from Janet. It's gone down now. Does that mean she doesn't want to speak? Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes, I can hear you now, Janet.
Yeah, sorry, I haven't been out. I don't know how I did that, got the hand up, because now I can't find it again.
We can hear you anyway, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay, thank you. It's just little bits of nonsense, really, prompted by everything that I've heard, including the apoplexy of one of our members almost on the talking about football. And I felt like saying, calm down, dear. But I grew up in London and I had an uncle that supported West Ham. My dad supported Tottenham. I lived in the Leighton Orient area. And my mum used to tell me that we supported the Cambridge part of the boat race. And I just thought, these adults are peculiar. I don't know what they're going on about and why. And I think that this early indoctrination of a lot of people is part of the fun of supporting different teams, I suppose, because people do seem to get a lot of enjoyment out of it, in spite of the piece that you read, Howard, which was quite interesting. I think that it is a lot of people are expressing horrible thoughts about Qatar and what's going on there, and also the horrible things that are happening in Iran and the people that are protesting there. And so I do think that this is stirring up a lot of thoughts in a lot of people, and maybe that's a good thing, but it seems to be increasingly the madness of capitalism that's evident in all this. Because I heard some footballer with an African name who used to play for Liverpool and has now gone to play for another national team. And is he going to be allowed to play for his own birth country team when it comes to? I think people must be quite schizophrenic when they're in these teams. And it's quite funny to think of all the languages that are involved and how they get on with each other. I suppose they learn a sort of a communal language, which must be quite fun, really. But I prefer snooker, and I was quite intrigued to see that the one player in the snooker that's running at the moment, championship thing that's running at the moment from Iran, is wearing a black armband, and I think I heard that he is wearing that in support of the people that are protesting in his own country. So I thought that was quite brave. And is he going back to live in Iran, and will he get picked upon? I don't know quite how these people are so brave as to do things that are against the tyrannical regimes in the countries that they live in, but you can't help admiring them. Yeah, I think that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Just a comment on Iran. It's a lot of symbolism being expressed that we might not notice, but the Iranian national team, they're expressing their opposition to the regime by simply not singing the national anthem at the beginning of the match when they're all lined up. They're just staying mum and not engaging in the singing of the national anthem. So Janet's quite right that there's subtle opposition that we might not notice, but the Iranian people will be well aware of.
Yeah, that's interesting, Alan. Yeah. Mm. If nobody else has got the hand up at the moment, go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, just the point that's just occurred to me now. We're of course mentioning a lot about Iran, terrible things going on there. I wonder if I think Saudi Arabia playing there, aren't they, as well in this World Cup? I wonder if anything is going to be said about this latest demonstration of the fact that there's one law for the owning class and one law for the working class. I refer to this, what's it bloody called? This prince of they've got their own aristocracy, haven't they? Prince, I can't remember his name. Who was the American intelligence say that he ordered the murder of that journalist, but apparently now there's been a rule in America that he's got immunity from prosecution. That journalist's fiance was trying to claim damages, and apparently now that apparently because he's a prime minister through some weird election that I'm not privy to, he now can't be pursued in American courts for murder, despite the fact that state recognizes him as the instigator of kidnapping and murder. Just a thought. The thought is, isn't it a surprise that there's a lot of this attention on Iran, which is not under the control of BP anymore, or Exxon, or what have you. That's it.
Thanks, Steve. Okay. No other hands up. Can I just say a brief word about the point that Janet made, that despite everything, people get enjoyment out of watching football. They do, obviously, but I get enjoyment out of watching football. What I don't get enjoyment out of is watching fans when a goal is scored for their team. Because it's a sort of ferocious kind of enjoyment, almost totally uncontrolled, which turns me off. I personally find it distasteful, grotesque almost, and can't help feeling that they react like that because something exhilarating, if you like, is missing in their own personal experience when they're not watching the football match. Really find it extremely off-putting to watch the fans go absolutely mad, almost out of control when their team scores. And, you wonder if they got the chance, whether they wouldn't do something which would be really dramatic and completely sort of out of order. But they're held back through sort of in various ways. That's something which often occurs to me when, you know, you're watching football when you're at a match, for example, but when you're watching football on television and they show the fans going absolutely berserk when a goal has been scored, utterly distasteful in my view. John, over to you.
Yes, I just wanted to basically echo what you've said about that, because I too have found this very distasteful indeed. And it seems to be something that has, maybe not originated, but certainly become worse just during my lifetime, because I'm sure I can remember people being excited, but not in that ferocious way that you describe. And while I'm at it, the behaviour of the players, they didn't do the same amount of hugging and cuddling that they seem to feel is obligatory now when someone scores a goal. So a lot of that, I think, has been encouraged by, you know, this sort of uniform way of showing excitement. It's kind of the media has all conspired to, well, not necessarily conspired, but all things taken together have led to this encouragement. There's a whole load of reciprocal interactions, I think, that has, over the course of my lifetime, made this behaviour just seem worse and worse and out of all proportion to what has actually happened. You know, I mean, it's a game and it is supposed to be enjoyable, and it's fine if people get a bit excited, but, you know, to me, the excitement is exaggerated, whether on the field or off.
Yeah, Johnny, it is out of all proportion, both in terms of, as you say, the players' reactions and the supporters' reactions. Yeah. Well, I don't see any hands up now. We are getting towards 9 o'clock, and we can sort of, you know, think about wrapping up maybe, but. I wonder whether Alan would like to sort of say any closing words about what he's heard or indeed what he's not heard. Thanks very much, by the way, Alan, for stepping in at the last minute the way you've done. It's been a really good discussion, I think.
I just want to go back to something that I think Paddy said very early, that when it comes to sport and politics, we just can't separate these things. I don't know if anybody watched Have I Got News For You? Ian Hislop raked Gary Neville across the coals because for all his so-called liberalism, he's away to Qatar earning hundreds of thousands of pounds being a pundit. And he tried to justify it by saying that by bringing football to Qatar, there's going to be a political change perhaps within Qatar, but who's he believing? Who actually believes that? And certainly for the commentators, they're not going to turn around this, Ian Hislop say, interfere with the commentary by saying, and human rights in Qatar's dreadful. They're not going to say these things. They're just going to ignore it, turn a blind eye to it. And that's what's sickening. This is a hypocrisy that's going to be expressed. Steve mentioned again Saudi Arabia, another country that should never have been permitted to step foot on a football stadium because of their attitudes to women, even. That these all go against the principles of FIFA, UEFA, and every football association that we know. But when it comes down to politics and football, they just get ignored. But that's basically what I just wanted to say. Hopefully, when Darren's free and the World Cup is over, perhaps he can come and give his speech on his observations of how the World Cup went.
Yeah, that would be good, actually, yeah. If you were able to do that, yeah, fine, yeah, okay, all right. Well, shall we say good night and thanks for attending, and thanks to Alan for stimulating us in the way he has. The next talk is it's not next Friday, is it? It's a week on Sunday, if I'm not mistaken. The next one, will somebody confirm that?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. What is it, Adam? Can you remind us?
It isn't anything yet.
But oh, it isn't anything yet. Right.
It'll probably have to be me talking about something. I might talk.
Okay. So it's a week Sunday morning, anyway. Okay. Well, thanks to everyone for attending and see you all soon. Okay. Yeah. Bye.
Thanks, Howard. Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Howard. Bye. Bye. Bye.